During the 70s, Alexandra did her own share of partying along with her other fellow co-eds during her college days. She traced the outlines of the party scene, and that of course led to her to make party acquaintances and associations. A part of the 70s scene and leftover free-spiritedness from the 60s led to a lot of hitchhiking and relying on the kindness of strangers, as well as your own ability to judge a character whenever you accepted a ride from them. Alexandra and her party acquaintance friend found themselves waiting for a bus at a city bus stop one day. They had been waiting for about 10 minutes when a young man pulled over and offered the two young co-eds a ride instead of waiting. Even Alexandra, with her caution towards strangers, was tempted to accept his offer. Her feet hurt from a particularly long day and week, and she was tired. Her friend, however, readily accepted the ride, turning back to Alexandra to see if she was coming also. However, whilst not breaking eye contact with the seemingly kind stranger, Alexandra politely declined his offer. So, Alexandra waved goodbye to her friend and waited for her bus as the man pulled back into traffic, driving her friend away with him. Life went on as usual for Alexandra after she caught her bus and got on with the rest of her day, since she didn't really speak to that friend often. College exams and life in general occupied Alexandra's mind. Before she knew it, college was over for her, and the years passed quickly. It wasn't until just recently that Alexandra saw her old college buddy appear on her TV screen. But to Alexandra's horror, she quickly realized that she was seeing her friend's college picture displayed, along with Ed Kemper's other murder victims. Alexandra was totally shocked upon realizing her friend's fate. She felt guilty that she didn't try to stop her friend from going with him. But her friend had caught free rides dozens of times and felt that she was a good enough judge of character. Not only that shocked Alexandra, though, but also the fact that she herself had looked into serial killer Ed Kemper's eyes that fateful day. Between May of 1972 and April 1973, Ed Kemper committed several brutal murders. Most of his victims were college co-eds, but what makes Ed's case different is the fact that at just 15 years old, the first two victims he claimed were his own grandparents. After that, he went on to take the lives of six innocent co-eds. He ended his brutal killing spree when he murdered his own mother and her best friend. Ed's killing methods varied from shootings, stabbings, and even strangulation. He liked to cruise around in his car and choose his co-ed victims and then offer them a ride. The innocent young co-eds that accepted his act of kindness had no idea that that would be the last ride they would ever accept from a stranger. I'm sure that a lot of you hearing this out there understand that you always question what you could have done differently in order for that person to still be alive today. But to me, at least, the truth behind deaths by murder may simply come down to a matter of wrong place, wrong time. For example, I have heard of a case of three women murdered out in Yosemite by Carrie Stainer several times, and from different angles. In one account, I believe that it was said that Carrie actually originally intended to kill another woman he had been seeing, and also her children. Apparently, she wasn't home when he went to try and execute his deadly plan. So allegedly, as a result, he happened to have spotted the three female visitors of Yosemite on their way out of their hotel, where Carrie Stainer worked as a maintenance man. If one of those three women would have just taken a few seconds longer to leave the hotel room, maybe they all would have waited back, and Carrie never would have spotted them. It's just a theory, but to me, that part of reality is truly terrifying. Please, everyone, stay safe. Keep your safe practices, and most importantly, follow your gut instincts. This happened when I was about 28. I am almost 40 now. This occurrence comes into my brain from time to time. I try to pass it off like it wasn't a big deal, or nothing substantial happened, but it's rarely been successful. There's a reason I still think about it, over 10 years later. It started when my future wife and I were getting ready to have a nice night out. It was Christmas time. For some reason, I remember that because our town always changed the streetlights on our little subdivisions to red and green. To be clear, it was only the rustic-looking ones that dotted the entrance and exits to the sub. They didn't really provide real streetlights. We had actual taller streetlights that, of course, had to be outfitted with the city-approved LED, or whatever. It was pretty, and a nice touch by the city and our HOA. I was fondly looking at one of the red and green streetlights from our two-bedroom apartment. My fiancé at the time and I had gotten this little place at a great time. Great recession, great prices. Fortunately, we were both working and not doing poorly financially. Since we didn't have children yet, we didn't need much room. This kind of leads into the story. I don't remember the square footage, but it was on the second floor of a three-floor walk-up. It was probably in the range of 700 to 800 square feet. Nothing big. We had more than enough room for two of us. That being said, we did not have a great amount of storage, to be truthful. We decided to use the smaller second bedroom as a storage room. We enjoyed a very generous master bedroom for both of us and put all of our extra stuff into the second bedroom. As mentioned earlier, we were getting ready to go out. I got home from work first. It was just getting into the evening. In this part of the world, that means it's already dark outside. As I entered the threshold to my home, I hung my coat up, tossed my keys into a dish that was striped black and white like a referee shirt, and walked toward the kitchen. Being that this place was so small, I passed by both bedrooms as I took a couple steps from the front door to the kitchen. The second bedroom, though, the one we did not use, was open. I might not have noticed it, but the light was on. We never kept the light on in that room. Overcome with a sudden feeling of panic, I froze, shamefully. But thankfully, that didn't last more than a couple of seconds. I cautiously opened the door. Nothing. And closed the door. Either she was putting storage items in the room and forgot to turn the light off, or the last time I was there, I forgot to turn the light off. Simple as that. Anyway, shut the light off, closed the door. Done. We went on to have a great fun night together. After having a few drinks, I brought up the light being left on in the extra bedroom. "I think you're busted," I said. She looked at me with a buzzed look of inquiry. When I came home today, the extra bedroom door was open and the light was on. "I think I finally confirmed where you keep the presents," I said with a little playfulness in my voice. "I haven't been in that room for weeks," she said, with a smile on her face. "And I keep the presents somewhere you'll never find them." She laughed. I had a brief moment of worry, but quickly put it away from my mind when our next round of shots came from our server. It should have bothered me more now that she confirmed she had not left the door open. As I said, it is possible I went in that room and forgot to close it, but I really doubted that. Several hours later, we stumbled back home, singing, looking at the holiday lights and the decorations on our walk home. Thankfully, our favorite place to get some late-night drinks was only a block away. As she opened the door for us, she threw her keys in the tray, kicked her shoes off, and skipped to the living room to throw herself on the couch. I laughed to myself, enjoying the moment and honestly liking where the night was going, until I walked by the extra bedroom. Obviously, she didn't notice. The door was open, maybe 2 to 3 inches, and the light was on. Being in an inebriated state, the gravity of this situation did not fully hit me. From what I can remember, I stood by the door for longer than I probably should have. I heard my fiancé call my name from the living room, and it snapped me out of my haze. I quickly reached into the room, slapped the light off, and quietly closed the door. no reason to alert her to some kind of paranormal activity going on. Not tonight. After she went to work the next morning, I sat in the small kitchen trying to decide what was going on. Option 1. Demons. Option 2. There was a very real possibility that someone was in our apartment. Maybe on several occasions. I decided to take a look around the bedroom. The door was still closed from last night, so that's a good sign. The room looked normal. Full of our extra junk, but normal. Until I made my way into the closet. Inside, beside more junk, was a handwritten note. Have fun last night? My fiancé and I reported all of this and stayed with a friend until we could get all of our stuff out. I can't tell you how scary seeing that note was. More than a few years ago, I'd say a good 10 years ago, my mother-in-law, we'll call her B for anonymity's sake, but B was living with me and my husband, her son, for a short period due to her ongoing medical issues at the time. We just felt it would be better for her to be with us for a while. Now let me inform you that B was not your typical mother-in-law. She was a serious addict and had been in and out of prison my husband's entire life. But in her older age and health issues, she had been in recovery for 8 years strong. When she was using her DOC, she would get so geeked up and she would stay awake for 4 to 5 days at a time, non-stop. When she would get like that, she would want to go and rouge old houses or abandoned houses, go through them and taking what she thought was anything of value. Well, one day, I had just walked in my front door to find a note on my kitchen table with what looked like a printout of a Google Earth image search. The note was from B. It stated that she was just playing around on Google Earth, looking around in the area we were currently living, and said she had found an abandoned house deep in the woods fairly close to our house. The house had no mailbox, no driveway, not even the remnants of a driveway. At least, not that the printout showed. So I got on Google Earth app myself, located the abandoned house, and nope, no driveway, no mailbox, not even a listed address. And the strangest part was the distance from the main road to the house would have been a good mile hike. There was no dirt road leading to the house, not even a foot trail. I'm not sure what possessed me, but I looked over at B and asked her, "You want to go find this house?" Needless to say, there was no hesitation on her part, and my genuine curiosity had gotten the best of me. So fast forward a few days, and the following weekend we set out to locate this abandoned house. The road that we had to be on in order to come semi-close to accessing the house was at the end of a residential suburban neighborhood. So we parked the car and started our hike through briars and poison oak and everything in between. It was a rough little hike, but about a good almost mile in, we both look up, and lo and behold, right there in the middle of this dense forest was a clearing. A little less than half a football field with a small, simple little house with a small stone wall off to the side. I was shocked, to say the least. I looked over at B, and she had the expression of pure excitement all over her face. It didn't take her long to find a way into the house and to start oohs and ahs. I decided to remain outside. I don't know, something just told me I didn't need to go in that house. So as I'm standing outside this abandoned house in the middle of nowhere, I walk over towards the old stone well just off the left of the house. I reached the opening to the well and peered down, not being able to see much. I stepped back and sat down on one of the big rocks right next to the well. I then, out of boredom, I guess, picked up a big stone and tossed it into the well, hearing the kerplunk as the stone tumbled down and hit the water at the bottom. So I stand up and I lean toward the well. With the most horrific, rotting, putrid smell hits me like a ton of bricks. The smell was so bad, it felt like it burned the inside of my nose. And let me tell you, it's that smell that once you've smelled it, you will never forget it. I dug my little flashlight out of my pocket and pointed it down the dark well. When I was able to focus on what I was actually looking at, I fell backwards as if I was pushed by an unseen force, falling flat on my butt. I'll never forget what I saw at the bottom of that well. Two elbows and the back of a head with long hair. That smell was the smell of a decaying human body. I don't think I've ever ran that fast in my life. I just took off, not even telling B I was leaving. I just started running and didn't stop until I reached the car. I sat in my car for about an hour just trying to process what I had just found and waited on B to figure out that I had already left. She finally made it back to the car with all the valuables she had found in hand. When she finally got in the passenger seat, I was as white as a ghost and was in shock. She asked me what was wrong, and I told her exactly what I found. Her jaw hit the floor, and she too turned as white as I was. I wasn't sure what to do, to be honest, so I simply drove to the closest store and called the non-emergency 911 line and explained what I had just found and how I stumbled onto it. Needless to say, the investigator thought me and B were basically full of crap, but he got in his car and followed us to the end of the neighborhood and explained that he would have to hike a good mile to find the abandoned house and the well where the body was. No more than 20 minutes later, we see police cars and the coroner van pull up at the end of the neighborhood. Eventually, they started to tape off the entire wooded area. As I'm just sitting in my car, asking one of the many officers there if B and I could leave, I look past the officer to see two people carrying out a black, completely zipped up body bag and placing it into the back of the coroner's van. I shuddered at the thought of who that person was or what could have happened to them. A few months later, I get a phone call from one of the detectives working on the body in the well case. She wanted to inform me that they were able to identify who the person in the well was. She was a 24-year-old female who had been reported missing out of a small town called Between, Georgia, 7 to 8 months ago. Between, Georgia was only an hour and a half drive without traffic from where her body was found. The craziest part is the multiple detectives on this case live and grew up in the area where the body was found, their entire lives. Most of them being in their mid to late 50s, and not one of them have ever known about or heard about the abandoned house in the middle of the woods. As luck would have it, I inherited a crappy piece of property in my early 30s when an uncle passed away. I know that sounds ungrateful, but if you had seen it, you would have laughed just like the rest of my family did. They teased me with countless haunted stories due to the fact that the property was in a wooded area in the middle of nowhere. I decided that I might as well go out and take a look one weekend, but no one was available to go with me. Mom was afraid for me and made me promise to call every night, seeing as I left Friday afternoon and planned to come back on Saturday. I drove a van, so I had decided that I would sleep in it, even though there was a self-contained cabin there. Unlucky for me, I was advised that there was no running water, but I had already resigned myself to fixing the place up and selling it even if I got a low price for it. When I pulled up to the driveway on the 4-acre property, I felt shivers going down my spine. I couldn't put my finger on why that happened, but I ignored it and continued to drive. The trees were so thick that I imagined myself getting lost, but soon I saw the cabin, which seemed too new to be in these shabby surroundings. There were a couple of abandoned old cars and a haphazard pile of rotting wood near the shed, which was next to the cabin. When I got out of my car, I felt icicles running through my veins. Maybe it was nerves, but I was sure I saw a shadow in the woods. I felt stupid, but I called out, "Hello? Of course, nothing was there, and the shadow disappeared. I actually thought it might have been a bear, so I raced to the front door and fiddled with the keys, eventually unlocking the door and letting myself in. There was no furniture apart from an old table and only one old chair. It was obvious that my uncle started doing the place up, but his death intervened. Thinking of him, I worried that his ghost might be haunting the cabin. Little did I realize at the time, the scariest things were to happen outside. I started to wonder if I would stay at all, but found myself dragging my bags and air mattress in. I sat at the table and ate a makeshift meal, making mental notes about what I had to do to get the place ready for sale. Then I heard a metallic noise not far from the back door. I couldn't be sure, but it sounded like a knife or axe being sharpened. Fair enough, I do have an overactive imagination, but the sound was very real to me. Haunted stories usually don't scare me one bit, but when I looked out the back window, there was nothing to see at first. As soon as I moved to go back to the table, something caught my attention out of the corner of my left eye. I gasped when I turned back and saw what I thought was a huge, hulking silhouette staring at me from the edge of the woods. It was too small to be a bear, but why would there be a person out here in the middle of nowhere? I moved over to the window and had a second look, but it was gone. I could have kicked myself for not bringing a weapon with me. I didn't even have a multi-tool gadget. Even though I am female and was quite tough at the time, I had been a tomboy all my life. I always had tools on me, but all I had at the time was a flashlight. Deciding not to be brave, I stayed in the cabin and wrote notes in my journal. I froze when I heard the metallic sound again. This time I was sure that it was inside the cabin. I got up and nervously crept around, saying, "Who's there?" Believe me when I tell you that I jumped out of my skin when a shadow walked past the window. The frightening thing was, I couldn't tell if the shadow had been in the front of the window or outside. In a panic, I ran over to the window and once again, I saw a huge silhouette closer to the cabin, but still at the edge of the woods. Rooted to the spot, I stared and barely blinked, trying my best to see if it was real. It seemed like hours went past, but eventually, I had to blink. When I did, the shadow disappeared. I really thought a crazy man was watching me, and I decided that I had to leave. But what if he was waiting for me outside? I gathered up my things and ran to the front door, but I stopped when I heard something fall over in the next room. Was he inside? I had no way of knowing, and I did not want to find out. I opened the door and ran as fast as I could to the car. I was so grateful when the engine started immediately. While driving off, I looked in the rearview mirror, and I swear, I could still see the outline of a person. But when I slowed down for one last look, they were gone. It might sound odd, but I actually gave the property away to my dad, who hasn't had any issues there at all.
So this happened a little over 2 years ago. It was late 2016 and I just started my new job at a motel. It was low pay, but I needed an office job as it was required for my training. One of my friends, Michael, got me this job. For a few days, I did training with the owner in the mornings, and for 2 nights, Michael trained me. Our job was the 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift. Nothing too exciting, just checking guests in and doing paperwork. My boss, who is the owner, went away with his wife on vacation for a week, which is attributed to the swift training I had to endure. So it was my first night alone on the night shift. There was a monitor with security cameras around the motel's property and large glass windows all around the office building with a glass door, and there was no night window like most motels have. It was fairly early in the night, at about 1 a.m. I was just doing my normal paperwork when a man walks in and asks if we have any rooms available. Usually if someone is sketchy, my boss has me lie and say no, but he seemed normal at the moment. However, we just had a meeting on customer satisfaction, and our boss was really encouraging us to be more polite to guests. Without hesitation, I said, yes, of course, just for one? And he replies, yes. So I begin creating the reservation on the computer when I notice he starts swatting in the air and making spitting noises, as if he were being surrounded by flies. I tried to ignore it, and as far as I was concerned, it wasn't my business, so I tried to check him into the room as quickly as possible. I give him his key, and he's on his way. At this point in time, I could be described as very timid, and had a lot going on in my personal life, so I hope you could all understand my reaction to what happens next. The man comes back from his room and slams his hand on the glass door and causes me to jump. Absolutely frightened, I look up to see him just staring at me. He cracks the door and puts his head through and says, "I can't get into my room. Why won't you let me into my room?" My only defense is trying to be helpful, so I replied with, maybe there's something wrong with your key. Here, let me give you another one." The look he had in his eyes was inexplicable. I felt like I was in absolute danger. I handed him his new key and he went back to his room. I tried texting Michael because he was the one who trained me. Though it was in the middle of the night and he was asleep, I needed some guidance. With no reply from Michael, I noticed the man trudging down the stairs to come back and I go into absolute panic mode. I run into the back office and lock the door and I pull out my pocket knife. It's important to keep protection when working at night. All the while, I hear the man in the office yelling, "Hello? Hello? Why won't you let me into my room? Do you not like me?" Me being an absolute idiot and not standing my ground and calling the police when I'm feeling scared, I decide to take the situation on alone. I reply with, "I'm just on the phone. I'll be right out." I then start calling Michael over and over for help, but no answer. I decided to take a few deep breaths and then step out of the office. However, the man was not there, but rather in the bathroom. I start hearing him talking to himself saying, "Kill her. Kill her. Kill her." My heart sank. Still being an idiot and not calling the police, he comes out and I say, your key was broken. I'm sorry. Let me escort you to your room." He agrees, thankfully. I was wearing a long sleeve sweater, so with my arms down, I was able to hide my knife in my hand while holding it. I begin to walk outside, and he seemed insistent to walk behind me. We begin making our way to the staircase and up towards his room. I was sweating from how nervous I was, cautiously looking behind me to make sure he wasn't going to make a move. He stops at a room, and I stop at his room a few doors down. I smile and I say, "Oh, that's the wrong room. This is your room," as it clearly said on the door. The whole time, he was going to someone else's room trying to open the door. I quickly ran back to the office and locked the door. The next guest I checked in was a police officer from a few towns away. I felt bad for him about the guy, but they seemed willing to keep an eye out and ear out. The next night, the man came back, but had the doors locked and told him we were all booked up. I explained to my boss what happened when he got back from vacation. However, he didn't take me that seriously. I continued to work there on the night shift for the next year, where many other strange encounters happened. So, strange man, let's never meet again. If you ever feel uncomfortable, always call the police.